Good morning and welcome to Leading Edge Medicine with Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samira Umat. Leading Edge Medicine is sponsored by Longevity Medical Clinics and is devoted to helping you feel and function better tomorrow than you do today by providing the newest and most advanced medical care designed to improve both your body and your brain. Leading Edge Medicine will keep you informed regarding the very latest developments in science and medicine while highlighting some of the Northwest's most prominent physicians. All while helping you separate the science from the silly and the facts from the fiction. This is live call-in radio at its very best, giving you the opportunity to participate in the show. Now, here are your hosts for Leading Edge Medicine, Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samira Umat, along with their co-host, Lynette Morgan.
And we're so glad you're here. This is Leading Edge Medicine. We're live in the studio, and I want to give you that phone number so that you can get in line with your questions for Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samira Umat. Phone lines are open right now, 206-421-5757. All right, we were talking with Robert, and he had questions about tadalafil and Viagra and Neo-40. So let's continue right. that discussion.
Well, it sounds like you're hitting things pretty heavy and, you know, still not getting quite the results you want. So if the little sildenafil add-on doesn't do it, we're probably looking then at some wider-ranging systemic issues. I would be interested in knowing, are you on the anti-senescence therapy or are you using rapamycin?
I'm not using rapamycin. I think you're talking about
dasatinib and quercetin.
I am taking quercetin 2 pills a night.
Okay, that's 1,000 milligrams of quercetin. But the senescent cell therapy would be to put you on 3 days of dasatinib and quercetin, 4 days off, 3 days on, 4 days off, 3 days on, 4 days off, for a total of 9 days of therapy over a three-week period. That'll usually drop your senescent cell load about 70% or so. And that should, within a few weeks afterwards, you should start to feel a significant difference because that then allows your healthy tissues to start growing and healing more effectively. And then, of course, the rapamycin is probably the best, quote, anti-aging drug we've got for regular use, 6 milligrams or so once a week. Many men are finding they urinate much better, and their exercise tolerance or strength, as well as their libido and sexual function, improve on rapamycin. So... That is the only drug that we have that has increased both lifespan and health span in every animal that's ever been tested on. Even worms do better on rapamycin. Worms, mice, dogs, primate animals and now humans are all being done on rapamycin. I mean, it's fascinating when I go and I talk to researchers around the world, and almost every top-rated longevity researcher on the planet seems to be on rapamycin. They may not be doing it for their patients, but they're doing it for themselves.
Right. Yes, I try to listen every Saturday. This program is like being in medical school and getting a weekly seminar.
Mm-hmm. So much great information, right?
Terrific information. And so I'm assuming that my longevity doc knows about these protocols and treatments.
Absolutely.
And I've heard you say we're still experimenting with the rapamycin to try to figure out, what's the dosage and how frequent.
Yeah, and that's the problem. No one on the planet knows what the optimal dose is. Although, interestingly, those of us that are more risk takers tend to use higher doses than we use with our patients. And as I've explained many times on the air, that's because, A, I'm a risk taker by nature. And B, if I do something stupid and hurt me, I won't sue me. If I do something and hurt you, it's different, right?
Mm-hmm.
So right. We tend to be far more conservative in doses with our patients than we are with ourselves.
Mm. Let me ask you a question, one more question, if I may.
Sure.
Oxytocin. Mm-hmm. It has to do with the interest in sex, particularly for the woman. I'm interested in helping my wife here.
Right.
You know, years ago I heard that the average male thinks about sex every 10 seconds.
In
those days, when I was younger, I thought, who are these people that are extending that time when I think about it constantly?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, remember, you remember in junior high school when you were walking down the hall and you had to carry your books in front of your crotch so that people wouldn't see your erection? Just walking past girls in the hallway did it to us in those days.
And you really wanted to talk to them, but you were embarrassed to approach anybody.
Talking was the least of what you wanted to do with them. Yes, that's right.
Yes. Well,
the things we learn.
But, yes.
But does that stuff really work? Because I found now that I can go whole minutes.
Without thinking of sex. I know. Here's the problem we've got as male animals, okay? Females are designed to have a high interest in sex when they are the most fertile. That is, in their mid-teens. You know, a girl's testosterone level hits its peak, hence her libido, when she's about 15 years old. Because we used to marry them off when they started having periods at 13. You know, so they were safe wives by 15. In our culture, we've stretched that out for a long time. We don't even get women, quote, permission to start having sex until she's actually on her downslope. By age 50, 50% of men have some degree of erectile dysfunction. And by some degree, I mean it just may not be as firm and robust as it used to be, but they're still having sex. But 70% of women have lost interest in sex. And from a physiologic, genetic basis, that makes perfectly sense. They're not fertile anymore. They're not going to have babies. So from a simple reproduction of the species basis, why would they have sex? They're done. Okay. You, mm-hmm. on the other hand, as long as you can have erections, can impregnate women till you're in your 80s. And so we are designed to be sexual creatures our entire lives. They are designed to be sexual creatures during their fertile years. And as fertility wanes, so does desire for a large percentage of women. Now, there's about 30% that doesn't happen for. About 30% of women stay interested in sex into late life. But they're the minority, to the utter disappointment of the men on the planet. You know. Oxytocin is not directly an aphrodisiac. It promotes bonding. It makes couples bond together emotionally, so they care about each other and they are attached long term. So oxytocin is a wonderful for couples, but it is not, strictly speaking, an aphrodisiac, does not increase sexual desire in women. The one codicil to that is a little experiment we did years ago. The oxytocin is used in traditional medicine to stimulate uterine contractions. If a woman is due for her baby and she's not going into labor, we'll hang an IV and we'll drip a little bit of oxytocin into her veins, and her uterus starts to contract firmly, and that gets her into labor, start trying to push that baby out. Well, since uterine spasm contractions during intercourse is one of the forms of orgasm that women can have, in fact, three of the five nerves that trigger orgasm in a woman are all related to the uterus. Are you shaking up your shaky? I had the idea of what happens if we were to take and get a robust dose of oxytocin, put it in a vaginal gel, use a vaginal applicator to put it up in the top of the vagina around the cervix and the base of the uterus so that it would have a large amount of it being absorbed into the uterus directly. What would that do for a woman's orgasmic response? And it turns out that in most of the women, increasing the oxytocin load does indeed give them a better orgasmic response. But you know, that presumes, A, that you've gone far enough along that you're going to put an applicator into the vagina and put the oxytocin in the top. So, you know, this is not exactly a bar drug. This is clearly for a committed couple. And it doesn't make them want sex in the first place. What it does is enhance their experience when they're already having sex with an appropriate partner. The one mishap we had with that, and I can tell Samara is already laughing over here. I made a mistake. It's true. Uh-oh. Dr. Mixon can do boo-boos. And when I gave the instructions to the compounding pharmacy on how much oxytocin to put in, I assumed that it was going to be one vaginal applicator per dose. And it turned out it was 1/5 of a vaginal applicator per dose. It was 1 cc.
So that was five times the amount?
Yes, that's right. And so Bandini and I decided to try it out, and I put the entire applicator up around her cervix. And when we had intercourse, it was spectacular for her. She really enjoyed it. That part was very good. But the bonding effect, because she got this massive overdose of oxytocin, for 3 days she was calling me at the office saying, "Jerry, I don't know what's going on. I keep obsessing about you. I can't get you out of my mind." So I have said, okay,
oh boy,
if that's going to be a side effect for an overdose on a drug, I kind of like it.
Yeah. Is that a problem?
Yes. Oh boy.
So, yes, we can use oxytocin as a sexual enhancement for women. Unfortunately, the molecule doesn't get through the skin in men very well, so it doesn't do a whole lot for us. Although we did have some men who said that when they had intercourse with their wife who had a lot of oxytocin gel in their vagina, the friction and being basically bathed in oxytocin and the friction of intercourse resulted in apparently getting enough across that it enhanced his response too.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Again, you know, with oxytocin, Jerry, we've also talked about long-term relationships where it just provides a little bit of a boost to reignite that relationship.
It's a wonderful drug for couples that have been together long enough that they're becoming roommates instead of lovers, because it does. It rebuilds that emotional bond. Mm-hmm. So oxytocin as nasal sprays or as buccal lozenges that they both use on a regular basis can be a real help in rekindling that emotional bond as a couple.
But there's lots of other things we do to help women as well.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah, raising a woman's testosterone level will often help too. So tell you what, hang on one more time. We're going to talk about what can be done for women's libido just for fun.
All right, we'll do that. And we've also got
just for fun is the word.
And we also have some phone calls on the line we're going to get to very soon. Jeff, stay on the line. And Aaron, we're going to get to you in just a moment. Stay right there. You're listening to Leading Edge Medicine. We'll be back.
I'm picking up.
And welcome back. It's Leading Edge Medicine. I'm Lynette. Good morning. I'm going to give you the phone number so you can call and talk to Dr. Mixon and Dr. Umat this morning. Live in the studio, it's 206-421-5757, talking with Robert. And Dr. Mixon, before the break, you said you were going to mention something real quick about fun.
Fun. Yeah, well, fun. Trying to rekindle passion in women. Because as we said, 70% of women by this stage of life have lost interest in sex.
And it's almost Valentine's Day, so very appropriate.
That's right.
Yeah.
But it turns out that raising a woman's testosterone load does have a significant effect in a fair number of women. Not in everybody, but in a fair number. So using testosterone for female diminished sexual response is a biggie. There is a drug specifically designed for that, approved by the FDA, the name of which escapes me because I've never used it. And I don't use it because there are so many side effects for it that the FDA requires that if a doctor wants to prescribe this drug, he has to go take a special course in handling the side effects. And so I said, any drug that has that big conditions to be written, I don't think I want to use on my patients.
But, you know, it's not just testosterone alone, especially for a woman who did have good libido prior to menopause. It's a whole host of hormones.
Yes, it is. It is. But, you know, if you're looking for one simple thing, that's the starting point. But you're right. DHEA, pregnenolone alone are both involved in sexual arousal. So is increased blood supply to the genitalia. So it turns out that things such as tadalafil work for women too. And the nice thing about tadalafil for women is that it increases the blood supply to the clitoris, which gives it that little bit of tingle, helps them get clitoral erections easy, just like men get their erections. And it lowers the risk of breast cancer, and it slows the spread of a wide number of cancers, and it increases blood flow to the brain. And so I'm saying, why shouldn't every woman be on tadalafil right along with men?
That's right. And then, you know, postmenopause, a lot of women also experience vaginal dryness, so they have pain with intercourse, which prevents them. And so it's a repetitive cycle. So once we look at their hormonal cascade and balance their hormones, they do, you know, improve. It improves their desire. It improves the experience.
Yes, absolutely. So, you know, if your wife isn't a patient, you ought to drag her in and get her to become one. Because there are things we can do. And for both of you, both the senescent cell therapies and the rapamycin have a very good chance of increasing your total experience in life. And, you know, the tadalafil lowers the risk of prostate cancer in you and breast cancer in her. And the testosterone lowers the risk of breast cancer dramatically in women. Drops it from 320 or so cases per 100,000 women years for women that have never been on a hormone, down to 50 cases per 100,000 women years in women that use testosterone regularly over a multi-year period. So, you know, it's a benefit for both men and women. Does that answer your questions reasonably well?
Yes, I appreciate the additional information. And she is a patient, just so you know.
Good.
And that has, you know, there's been improvement there. But we've been married over 50 years. So
yay. Congratulations.
Yeah.
Well, thank you. You know, we're both proud of that record. But as Dr. Mixon has said, often I feel like we're roommates now that share a house together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But not the kind of interaction that husbands and wives, not my ideal.
No, it's not. It's not most men's ideal, but, you know, it's a reality for the majority of long-term couples on this planet. And, of course, one of the things we want to do at Longevity is to improve that situation. So, you know, talk to your doc about it. Oxytocin may well be of some benefit, at least to help the emotional bonding. Mm-hmm. And remember, for sex, for a man, sex is a physical experience with relatively limited emotional connections. That's why, you know, men have gone to prostitutions for billions of years. It's as good if you don't know her name as if you're in love with her. For women, sex is an emotional experience with physical ramifications. And so the bonding, the emotional connections are incredibly important for women in sexuality.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you should write a book, Jerry, because a lot of times men don't understand women. And we talked about this briefly last week as well. And women have no clue of what men are thinking, and men have no clue what women are thinking. And they, you know, you can't connect because of that disconnect.
Yeah. Well, you know, I have told this story several times through the years, but I'm going to tell it again. Here is how sex came to be. In the great before, God was bored because the universe was so darn predictable. He said, I've got to spice things up a little bit and get a little bit of uncertainty in the universe. So he said, I'm going to create two very different creatures. They aren't going to look alike. They aren't going to think alike. Emotionally, they're not going to be in the same universe. They're radically different creatures. They don't see themselves or the universe around them in remotely similar ways. And then I'm going to fix it so they can't exist without each other. And I'll sit back and watch the fun. And I think that's our situation. Men and women are so radically different. And the reason we don't understand the joke is we are the joke.
Oh. I remember that chapter in the Bible.
Anyway. Okay, thank you for the
thank
call,
Thank you
sir.
For that, Robert. So much wonderful information there. Wow, thank you so much. Leading Edge Medicine, this is what you're listening to with Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samira Umet. We are now traveling to Lakewood. Jeff is on the line. Hi there, Jeff. Welcome.
Hello, Jeff.
Hi, good morning. My wife and I are both patients at your Tacoma clinic. I've been taking your rapamycin for a couple months now, which is great. And I recently decided to give your senescent cell therapy with a dasatinib a try. And that's my call. I started Monday, and I had to stop Monday. I had terrible side effects to it. A couple of days of diarrhea, muscle, joint pain, fatigue. That night, I had terrible chills for about 4 or 5 hours, and I've had a headache ever since.
Well, you know, it may be that your rapamycin has already lowered your senescent cell load sufficiently that you don't need to be driven any lower.
That's good to hear. Because my first thought was maybe my senescent cell count is so high that I had the side effects because it's taken away a whole lot of it.
No, you know, we've had a few people. Most people tolerate the dasatinib very well. I take it the first day I don't notice anything. The second day I don't quite feel up to par. And by the third day I'm a little headachy and just kind of blah. Then the next day without it, I'm fine. I had one of my doctors who went on it and developed severe, painful swelling of their face. And that was, until you, has been the only really bad side effect I've heard about with it. But, you know, we're back to Dr. Mixon's first rule of medicine. Anything strong enough to help is strong enough to hurt. And there will be people that are hypersensitive to anything we do.
Yeah.
And you may well be one of those folk.
Well, and that leads me to my next thought on it is, what if I were to just take half as much, right again?
Yeah.
We've done that sometimes.
We have. And and there is a protocol for a 50 milligram dose 5 days instead of 3 days at 100.
Yes.
And that is a possibility as well. I'd probably wait for you to kind of recover from this. Sounds like you had a pretty nasty reaction. And then maybe rethink and revisit, maybe even hold off on the rapamycin for a few weeks before you do it. So talk to your doctor, and if they need help, have them email Dr. Mixon and myself, and then we can kind of talk through it together.
And we've had a few patients that we've used a 50 milligram instead of 100 milligram for 5 days. And I've had one person that actually cut the dose down to 25 milligrams because that was the most they would tolerate. So
interesting. Well, it's expensive stuff, so I'd divvy it up myself, I think.
Yeah, it is a little pricey. I agree. That's the big downside. The good news, of course, is we don't charge any extra for it. You know, that's all pharmacy cost. Yeah. So when we manage it, we just manage it as part of your membership.
Right.
That's great. Yeah, and I know that. I know it's very expensive to go any other route to get all of it. Well, thank you for your advice, and I'll talk to my doctor about it.
Okay. Thank you, sir. Bye bye.
Yeah.
All right. We have some more callers on the way, but we're going to take a quick break and we will be back with more of your questions. Let me give you that phone number to call right now. It's 206-421-5757. Again, that's for calling into the show today with Dr. Mixon and Dr. Umet. 206-421-5757. 5757. We'll be back with Aaron and Ray in just a moment. Welcome back to Leading Edge Medicine. My name is Lynette, here with two doctors in the studio and taking your questions at 206-421-5757. Headed to Issaquah, we have Aaron on the line. Hi there, Aaron.
Hello, Aaron.
Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning. Quick question. In my last four InBodies, my fat content has been, ratio has been dropping.
Good.
I'm currently at 6.8% of my body weight.
Wow, that's way lower than I would expect. Okay.
Yeah. Can that be a problem if it keeps going down?
Yes.
Yes. Yeah, we don't really want you below about 9%.
So, yeah, I like a little cushion, and I tell everybody that.
Yeah. Normal for a man is between 9 and 19. So at 9, you're at the low end of normal. When you drop down into the 8 and, you know, 7 point something, you're below what we're looking for.
Where do you normally run, and why are you dropping?
I just work out in my house 6 days a week, an hour a day.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure why it's dropping so much now.
Well, let's take a look at a different aspect of that. When you look at your InBody on the muscle mass, are you well above the normal range for muscle?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Okay, that may give us your answer. Remember, percentage of body fat. They look at your total body mass and what percentage of it is fat. Okay. You're just under 8% of your body mass is fat. But if you've got 20 or 25% more muscle than you're supposed to have, that's going to shift your ratio of fat even lower. Okay. Two guys with the same amount of fat, if one is low on muscle, that same amount of fat might be 20%. If he's in normal muscle, that might drop it down to 14, 15%. If he's high muscle, that might drop it down below normal, because we're looking at percentage of muscle, percentage of fat, percentage of bone and water fluids, and so on. So it may not be that you're losing fat. So what you need to do is look at, you in that InBody, you get both a percentage of body fat, but you also get an absolute number, how much fat mass you had
mm-hmm.
in your each extremity and in your torso. So look at that. If the absolute amount of fat is declining, that's a different story than if the percentage of your body mass as fat is declining.
Okay.
All right.
So okay. Yeah, look at that.
Yeah, look over them and then, you know, chat with your doc about it a bit. But it may just be that you've got, you're at the low end of normal for body fat, and then you're above normal for muscle mass. And the combination means you end up with a low percentage of body fat for against your total body mass.
Okay. Did I work out less then?
No. No, I'm not worried about it if that's what it is. Whereas if you have a normal amount of fat, just an abnormal amount of muscle, that gives us a low percentage. Now, if your absolute numbers of fat are dropping, that's a different story. So look at the numbers of muscle and fat in absolute poundage. See how many pounds of body fat you have now versus 6 months ago. And let's see where that is.
Okay, great. Thank you for that.
Okay, take care, sir.
All right. Thank you for the call, Aaron. Headed over to Tacoma, Ray has a question for the doctors. Good morning, Ray.
Hello,
Hi.
Ray.
Dr. Mixon, I spoke to you a couple months ago. I don't know if you recall, but I was diagnosed with oh, what am I trying to think of? Light chain disease, lombotype.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And you asked me to leave my information with you, and I wasn't sure what was going to happen with that. So far, I haven't heard anything, but okay. Two comments. Number one, my neurologist, they sent me to a neurologist, and she diagnosed me with neurologic orthostatic hypotension, and that's what triggered the test that revealed the monoclonal protein.
Right.
And I asked her what triggered that or what clued her into that. And it was interesting. She said that people with this kind of orthostatic hypotension have a high incidence of monoclonal protein gammopathy.
Uh-huh.
And I didn't know why that would be, but just a comment. And the other thing is, after 3 months of waiting, after I got the diagnosis, I finally got into a hematologist and an oncologist.
Good.
He's both. And he just ordered tons of tests and blood work and MRI and PET scan, and we're still waiting for the results of that to come in. And I have a follow-up appointment early March. But my question to you was, do you think the Galleri test would be something that I should look into?
No.
And what about, no?
No, I wouldn't. You know, you've already got a bone marrow dyscrasia, and so the oncologists are going to be chasing that down big time. The thing that I'm curious about, because, you know, I recall your call, and I do recall saying, you know, send me a email through the Contact Us, but I don't recall ever seeing the email.
You didn't get an email because I don't have an email. What I did I sent all the information to Longevity in Tacoma to my doctor there.
Okay, so it went to that doctor,
chart.
Not to me. Okay, yeah, then.
Yeah, and the other thing I wanted to tell you is that the hematologist has one other patient with Longevity, and he said he was real skeptical. And then he looked into it, which most doctors don't bother.
Mm-hmm.
But he said he was very impressed with the testing that you do and the treatment plan. And he asked me if there was some way that he could get in contact with you.
Oh,
and I said, I really didn't know.
Give me his name, and I'll call him Monday. That's easy.
And the best way, Ray, is for you to just send an email to contact
us. She doesn't have email.
Yeah. Oh, you don't have email.
That's why she sent a snail mail to her doctor.
You know, this is embarrassing, but I don't have a smartphone right now or an email.
All right.
But you can call us at our customer service.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But Lynette, write the name down.
Okay.
Go ahead and just tell us the name, because you're not saying anything bad. That,
right.
You know, I just want to chat with your doctor.
And he asked for your number. And he asked for the doctor in Tacoma that I go to in the clinic, his number.
Okay.
And he said he was very impressed with the workup that he saw from this other patient. And he said he's even been listening to your program now and then.
Well, you know, the funny thing is,
I was really pleased.
We've got about 50-some doctors as patients, which is really kind of fun.
I know.
So,
there used to be a previous eye doctor that you worked with who went back east. And
John went back to join a faculty at a medical school. Yeah. So,
right. And my husband used to do all his anesthetic for the eye treatments.
I see.
But so I did sign up to get the Galleri test, but I want to check that out with you.
No, you've already got the oncologist who's going to be chasing you down. I think the problem you've got is significant enough. I wouldn't want to get distracted with anything else. So you chase down this lamina dyscrasia. In the meantime, what's the name of your oncologist?
His name is Chavez, Dr. Chavez. I'm looking for his first name here in my...
Chavez. Well, there can't Dr. be that many Chavez's. Chavez. What city is he in?
He's Tacoma.
In Tacoma, okay. Oncologist Chavez, Tacoma. I'll find him.
He's with Dr. Senecal. He is a hematologist, oncologist, and gastrointestinal specialist. He has some pretty significant credentials.
And see, I'm just an old country doc, so I'm always impressed by these smart people.
I don't know. But I was impressed, or I felt really good that he didn't just shut me out, which has happened with other doctors. And, you know, they just don't know enough about the clinic. I wish there was some kind of a, something to tell them about you that I could just hand to them, you know?
Yeah.
Because they've got this impression that we're some kind of a, clinic that does all this
voodoo medicine
and all that kind of stuff.
I understand. Of course, I
but
have
the other
both.
Question is, what about senescent cell therapy?
Now, right now, you've got a problem I want solved before we do anything with senescent cell or anything else with you. Yeah, because the drug we use for the senescent cell therapy is a anti-neoplastic. It is an anti-cancer drug that's used for some forms of leukemia. And I sure as heck don't want to interfere with what your other doctor is doing. So
And what he's trying to educate me on now is the different stages of this disease.
Okay.
And, hopefully he'll be able to tell me that when I have the follow-up appointment. And I've got him right here.
Okay.
It's NWMS Hematology Oncology.
Wonderful. I'll give him a buzz on Monday and say hello. Thank you very much for the call.
Okay, thank you.
Okay.
Thank you, Ray, for the call. We're back with Alan and Doris in just a moment. This is Leading Edge Medicine. We'll be back. Welcome back, Leading Edge Medicine, with just a few minutes to go and some phone calls. So let's get right to them with Dr. Mixon and Dr. Umat. We're going to Federal Way. Alan is on the line. Welcome to the show, Alan.
Thank you very much. MCT oil seems to be a new rage. Can you tell me, is there any benefit to it?
Well, okay, MCT, medium chain triglycerides. These are oils that are easily metabolized by the brain as a alternative to glucose, to our normal blood sugars. And it's used, I mean, I don't know what the current fad is, but about 5 or 6, 7 years ago, a lot of people were using it for early dementia, Alzheimer's disease and so on.
Ketogenic diet, you know.
And in conjunction with the ketogenic diet and the MCT oils. And we're claiming, at least for a year or so, significant improvement in their cognitive function. Didn't cure the disease, but it actually gave the neurons an alternative energy source they could use, since Alzheimer's patients tend to be extremely insulin resistant, at least their brain is. So they don't get much of the sugars that they would normally burn. They can't get them into the cells. An alternative to the MCT oils was using nasal insulin, spraying insulin up the nose so that it could cross the cribriform plate into the brain circulation and getting higher function of the glucose metabolism by raising the brain insulin levels. But once more, that was a very short-term improvement, and then they would lapse right back where they were.
Mm. Why are you interested in it?
Yeah, what's the latest fad with them, medium-chain triglyceride oils?
Well, I think it has something to do with inducing ketosis. In other words, as a weight.
Yeah.
To help you lose weight.
Yeah, so the same thing, you know, with the high-protein, ketogenic type of a diet. Mm-hmm. So they all do the same. It basically is for satiety. You feel full for longer periods of time. It does increase your triglycerides and LDL cholesterol levels. So if you do have high cholesterol, be very careful.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that's great advice. One other thing now. Uh-huh. There's something new for detecting breast cancer in women that have dense tissue and quantitative transmission ultrasound. It's supposed to be better than X-ray, and there's no smashing the breast.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I'm just wondering.
Well, if you know, if there is increased density, then my first choice is usually just to send for an MRI.
Yeah, MRIs are the most sensitive of all. But you're right. Most women don't like getting their breasts squished for the
absolutely
for the
right
X-ray mammogram. I mean, it's kind of miserable.
Yeah, I don't like it.
Especially relatively young women that still have dense breasts and so have a lot of glandular tissue. You know,
and unfortunately, some will miss the investigation just because of this reason.
That's right. And you're right. The computerized ultrasounds where they're actually looking at, you know, at a differential transmission can make a real difference and can be as accurate or more accurate for some breasts than the traditional mammogram. But the ultrasound is still by far the most precise for picking up tumors of any kind.
MRI, you mean?
What did I say?
Ultrasound.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, the MRI, the magnetic resonance imaging, yeah. It's by far the most expensive.
Yes.
But it's also the most precise.
Yeah. You know, if it's a routine screening in a low-risk case, you can do the ultrasound. That's fine. And somebody will get the investigation done. But if it's a risk factor and you really need to know, then the MRI is the way to go.
Yep. If there's something about that patient that scares me, I want the best.
Yeah.
Okay. Roughly, can you give me an idea how much an MRI might cost in this country?
I don't know right now. No. You know, the problem with MRI pricing is what the individual pays versus what the insurance company pays versus what Medicare pays versus what the welfare systems pay are all different.
Yeah.
You know, it's... For instance, I can get a volumetric brain MRI looking for the size of the hypothalamus and so on to see how well this person is doing with their future memory and what is their risk of dementia. And if they're over 65, they can get it done with Medicare for $25.
Hmm.
But that's not the real price. That's what the Medicare contractor calls for.
Yeah, but not everybody over 65 can get it, Jerry.
Well, that's a problem.
Yeah.
You know, it has to be approved by Medicare.
They don't approve.
Yeah. You know, otherwise it might be a $1,000 study. And so, I don't know. It depends on if you're looking for the least expensive, you go to one, don't go to the hospitals. Hospitals are the most expensive studies on the planet. Go to one of the private imaging companies like Reyes. They will give you a price that is far more reasonable, and they're even negotiable.
Oh, that's really good to know.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I guess that's all I have. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Alan. We're going to quickly go to Doris and at least see what we can do here. Hi there, Doris. Welcome to the show.
Hello, Doris.
Oh, maybe we don't have Doris. Doris, you'll need to call us back. And Bryn, call us back next week on the show, if you would, since we were not able to get to those calls.
Doris is probably off doing her cartoon session, you know, Dory the Explorer.
Dora the Explorer, yes. Oh, so many good questions and so much going on today with Dr. Mixon and Dr. Umat. Thank you for that. We have just a couple minutes left of our show, and we would love to meet you and have have you be a longevity patient like so many of our callers today and to have some good results. And I love it when they call in and will share that, hey, you know, I have been a patient for 2 years, for 10 years, my wife and I for 15 years. And we would love to have you be our patient as well. And we started off with a free health analysis appointment, a way for you to come into the clinics, get to know our staff, meet with someone that can let you know what you are at risk for with just two simple tests, right, Dr. Umat? Just
That's
two
right.
tests.
Mm-hmm. Easy peasy, a few minutes only. So the mm-hmm. two tests will basically just be an introduction to us, but they tell us a lot of about you. It'll allow us to share some information with you, and then you can do a blood draw. And then finally, hey, become a patient.
That's right. That is what we are hoping. In order to get the free health analysis appointment all set up, you just need to give us a call at 866-86-YOUNG. That's 866-86-YOUNG. You can also go to our website, which is lmclinic.com, and you can pick the clinic near you, Kirkland, Tacoma, or Linwood. And you can also pick the day and the time that works best for your busy schedule. Again, the phone number, 866-86-YOUNG, or you can go to our website, lmclinic.com. We will have Dr. Dan Nelson from Pro Ortho here. He is the pain specialist. As